Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Buff Hub, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. Again, I am your host, Steve Vega, and today, finally, it's been a long time coming, guys. He is my first guest in probably a little over 6 months. So I've basically been trying to hone in on just running this podcast on my own for a little bit, just to really hone in on my skills. But who better to learn from today than Mr. Joe Miller himself, from Buffalo Rumblings, host of the Overreaction Buffalo podcast, contributor for Buffalo Rumblings. I miss you. How are you, Joe?
You miss me? I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the invite. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and chat with you for a couple minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I'm so excited to finally catch up with everyone on the channel. I'm looking forward to talking to everyone, literally everyone's on the list. I got guys from even up to beat reporters that I want to catch up with. Everyone's been pretty busy, so it's been hard to get a hold of anyone.
And I get to be the first, which is awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, Appreciate it. Absolutely. So guys, today, just going to give you a couple of points that we're going to break down. What are the Bills missing? How many more years does Sean McDermott deserve as head coach? Then we're going to go into two last questions. Do the Bills have a problem at developing young talent? And finally, what are three positives we can conjure together, Joe, that we can take from this season? And just kind of finish it off from there, because I think, obviously, Joe, there's a lot that we can talk about that is easily, even though it's a positive, we can turn it into a negative. So we're going to try to leave everything on a good note, although we are going to tackle some of these tough questions. And I'm going to pick your brain. I was watching you and Jay Spence last night. And you know, it's so awesome to see you guys. Number one, congrats to Jay Spence. He is the editor in chief now, running Buffalo Rumblings. And, it's awesome. You know, I'm so proud of him, and we've all been kind of on this little journey together running this platform, for Bills fans. You know what I mean? And we're not experts, right? We're not experts, Joe.
Right. No, I am definitely not an expert. Marking up the wrong tree if you're looking for an expert.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I feel like some people think when you run a podcast, you try to like have all these hot like points and things you're trying to make. Like, no, it's honestly, I am talking to anyone on this podcast the way I talk to the guys at work. The way I talk to my father when he calls me on the way back home from work, or whenever we just want to talk. That's kind of what my vision has been with Buff Hub, to connect with people. And so, Joe, let's just be real here. Obviously, we saw a lot of players come and go, but now the Bills are sitting here with a big question mark on what is missing. And so after this season, I know it's a broad question, as some of these are going to be, but trying to hone in on what's going on with the Bills at this moment, you know, what do you think is missing with these Buffalo Bills to take it to that next step and at least just get to a Super Bowl?
Well, the easiest thing that they're missing, and obviously they've got somewhat of an answer on this roster already, who was injured, is a pass rush, an effective, sustained, efficient, constant pass rush, whether with four or whether, you know, you are mixing it in with some scheme stuff or some blitzes and things like that. But the hard part about the whole situation is the fact that, you know, you were relying early on a very, you know, rather old, aging Von Miller, who looks spry and young, but 32, 33 is not exactly 25 or 26. And then, you know, inevitably he gets hurt, as we all know. And then the pass rush, you know, two first rounders on that defensive line, two second rounders on that defensive line. Daquan Jones was a big addition, bringing Jordan Phillips back, bringing Shaq Lawson back, you know, bringing in Tim Settle. and they just could not mount a pass rush at all. And that clearly showed itself towards, well, throughout, ever since Vaughn got hurt on Thanksgiving, it showed itself, but it really came to play and came up big in the both playoff games, both against the Dolphins as well as against the Bengals, and probably the week before that, before the playoffs as well, against the Patriots. But you know, you can probably give them a little bit of a pass the week before against the Patriots, just because that was, you know, the week after the DeMar Hamlin game. There wasn't a lot of preparation. There wasn't a lot of game planning. It was obviously a tough week for them mentally and emotionally and stuff like that. Second thing they're missing is a number two wide receiver. The Bills took a huge gamble and missed, whiffed big time on two things as it pertains to the wide receiver group. Number one, expecting and believing that Gabe Davis was ready to slide into that number two spot. And we discovered throughout the entire season that he's either not ready or he's not equipped to be a true number two wide receiver in the NFL. And what that means is just basically when you take a look at what teams did against the Buffalo Bills, whether it was bracketing Stephon Diggs and putting their number one cover corner on Gabe Davis and basically shutting Gabe Davis down, or however they were trying to run a zone or a scheme against us. And then you add in his 50% drop rate and it just doesn't look good. The Bills not only need to find a second wide receiver to slide into this, to basically push Gabe back down to where he's very good and very effective. And we're not here to say that Gabe Davis is a bad wide receiver. Some guys just aren't cut out to be a one or a two. You get me a good one, Stephon Diggs. You get me a good number two, like an Emmanuel Sanders, somebody take coverage, John Brown, when John Brown was here before. And you get a really good slot receiver, like a Cole Beasley, who's standing on your doorstep, knocking on the door, wanting to come in, and move Gabe Davis to the fourth wide receiver, and he can play very, very effectively and be the guy that you want and need him to be. The third thing that the Bills need is they need some help in that offensive line. So whether it's, you know, you move Ryan Bates back to left guard and you go draft yourself somewhere in the first round, or you move back to the second and you pick up a right guard, something that's a kid that can come in and be ready to play. I wouldn't even be opposed to it being a center, and a guy that we kind of, you know, have waiting in the wings, like we did with Eric Wood. Eric Wood, when he got drafted in the first round, I forget what year it was, like, '07, '08. And the Bills played him at right guard for a little while before he was ready to take over. But yeah, for me, those are the three things: pass rush, number two wide receiver, and they need a right guard really bad.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, you know, how the Bills are practically built is to be just as explosive as, offensively, as any team in the NFL.
Right.
It's so crazy, Joe, because for me, when I really look at this team, and I mean, you go 5-1 before the bye week, and then it just turns into this weird debacle and gritty just stretch of like 3-point games. And it's like losing to the Jets, then you lose to Minnesota, and then you feel like the wheels are going to fall off. And then you just have this grinder of a two-game stretch against the Browns and the Lions, and then you finish off the season strong.
Right.
Right? And the what happens with the Bengals just kind of throws the wheels off the train, so to speak. And I'm kind of sitting here, and I'm just, okay, so, like, how much do we peg this team? Because, personally, I think if the Bills had a guy that was, I'm not saying we need a Joe Mixon, I'm just saying a guy that could just get you those steady 4 or 5 yard gains, that basically opens up the offense for everyone. It's just there's so much tape on this team now on how to defend them and how to stop them. Everyone's trying to match up two teams like Buffalo and Kansas City, and now the Bengals in the AFC, that whenever they get a chance to, you know, bite at their ankles, they're going to do it the best they can and as hard as they can just to prove a point that they're on the rise. You saw that with the Jets. You saw that you know, with the Dolphins, my goodness, these teams that are just, they linger, and sometimes they get into the playoffs and you still beat them, but you're bumped, you're bruised, you're battered. I think the only way to really stifle those teams is to develop a very strong run game. And again, we're back at square one, but I think personally, I'm not going to be too harsh after really looking at the stats and really looking at this team over this year. And I'm going to say, you know what? There's a lot of upside with this run game, as long as they can figure out guys on the offensive line that can just fit the scheme better. I just think the flopping around, the Cody Ford trade, the this, the that, and injuries are just, offensive line had their own separate soap opera going on that we can get into another day. But okay, now that we're here, and we're distressed, and then we're like, what is it? The five stages of grief. I feel like we're past all of it. I mean, look, let's just be real here now, right? I feel like everyone's pretty much calmed down a whole lot after we saw the Bengals get smacked out. It's fine. We're feeling better. Sure. It's a little bit of ointment on the wound, I guess. How many more years does Sean McDermott really deserve as a head coach? With, you got to think about it. The NFL is evolving. Defensive head coaches are, for some reason, still getting hired, still getting all this push by GMs, but yet you're seeing who's left. Mm-hmm. Offensive head coaches running teams now. What do you think about Sean McDermott now running the Bills? I mean, he's obviously brought this team a very long ways, basically starting from scratch, and now we're it's funny, we're not satisfied, and some people are even saying we want to fire him. All right, well, what now? What now, Joe? What do you feel about Sean McDermott? As far as let's what is he have a 5-year plan left, a 10-year plan left? What do you feel?
So Sean McDermott is an interesting conversation, and it's primarily because so many members of Bills Mafia just don't even understand what his job is. The amount of times that I had to, you know, take a tweet or answer a question or have a conversation with somebody, you know, who's asking me, you know, I just can't believe that Sean McDermott would sit down Kaiir Elam for this game. And it's just a ridiculous thought that Sean McDermott like walks into not only Leslie Frazier's office, but the defensive backs like coach's office and is like, hey, by the way, Kaiir Elam isn't playing this week. Like, it's just it's ridiculous. Sean McDermott is a CEO, right? He is the leader of a football franchise. And the coordinators are the respective CEOs of their offense and their defense and their special teams. And then they've got, you know, subsequent managers that follow in and fall in behind all of them. Even if, you know, you're in the military, if you think about just kind of rank and how rank and file works. So the reality is Sean McDermott, while he is a defensive minded head coach and probably has, you know, he's probably involved a little more in the defensive scheming and the defensive game plans. And he's probably, you know, got his ear pinned a little bit more there than he does on the offensive side. He's allowing Leslie Frazier, you know, to do his job. He's allowing Ken Dorsey to do his job. Now the question is how does he run his organization? So is it a situation where you have a game plan for the year and you've got an idea for the year and a concept for the year and you go forward and you're a minimal tweaker through, and we're just going to, as he says, trust the process and see where it gets us and trust what we've built and what we've put together? Or is he a herky jerky, got to change everything, and this isn't working, throw that out, throw this out? It doesn't seem like he's the latter. It seems like he's the former. He's more of a steady Eddie. Let's keep going. Let's tweak where we need to tweak, but let's keep the ship going forward, which is what he did. Now, to answer your question, how much time does he get? I don't know. Do you guys want to go back to Mike Mularkey? Do you want to go back to Dick Geron? Do you want to go back to, you know, Doug Marrone? Do you want to go back to Rex Ryan? Do you want to go back to people that don't win football games? Because culture is a huge thing, and culture trumps strategy every day of the week. And Sean McDermott has changed the culture of this organization. As you said, I'm on a show with John Fina, and John Fina will tell you that when Greg Williams and Tom Donahoe came into this organization, that the culture completely went from amazing and the place where everybody wanted to be to one of the worst cultures that anybody had ever been a part of. And it lasted for 17 years. So think about that for a second. So for me, as much as I want to get over the hump and I want to win a Super Bowl, or at least go to a Super Bowl, I think you give him the amount of time that he needs to finish the job. Now, that being said, if things are going on like similar to where we are right now, where Leslie Frazier, you know, do you go into another year with Leslie Frazier and nothing changes again next year? Do you go into this year with Ken Dorsey and nothing changes next year? And then Sean McDermott is faced with a decision like, well, this has been 2 years of this. I need to make some changes, or do I just keep basically pounding the table with these two guys? Well, we know Sean McDermott has made difficult decisions before. He fired Rick Dennison, his first year offensive coordinator, his first season. So he let him go. So we know that he can make difficult decisions. He fired his special teams coordinator. So we know that he's capable of doing it. The question is at what point, you know, and when? But I can't foresee moving on from Sean McDermott. I mean, the dude is just, he's young, he's talented, he's a leader of men. The culture that he has makes people want to play here. And like I said, it's funny how quickly we forget what it was like to have Dick, the 7-9 Dick Geron for 5 years. And poke me in the eye with a stick before we go back to that.
You know, and you know what's so crazy, Joe, is I look back this week And I really tried to...
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Almost like, you know, whenever, like I personally just went on the longest trip I almost think you can do. And literally it's, I drove across the entire United States from Vegas to New Jersey.
That's a long drive.
And it was a long drive. And it took me a couple of weeks after, it took me about a month and a half after being here finally on the Northeast Coast to realize, wow, I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I had to do this. I had to be careful with that. Like there were so many things I encountered on the road. I encountered in different places and whatever have you. Having my son with me, a 2-year-old, trying to keep him in. I'm just like, how did I do it? And you look back and some things, sometimes they happen so fast and you're trying to get your hands back on the wheel, right? And I think this is kind of what happened with Buffalo. I don't think they anticipated to be a Super Bowl contender as fast as they did when it happened. I mean, literally, we went a year removed from the Deshaun Watson debacle, you know, in that Houston game in the playoffs to the next year. Whoa.
Right.
Josh Allen put everyone on notice and AFC championship. And then it just started to turn into this huge conversation of Josh Allen, you know, is going up against Patrick Mahomes toe for toe. And he sure as hell has.
Yep.
Now, I think now it's like, okay, but at what cost, right? That's the thing right now. If you really look at the whole situation at large, it costs Buffalo so much to stay relevant within the last 2 years that now it's kind of like, okay, it's almost like this loss was a blessing in disguise. Maybe they could pull back a little bit. And I've been recommending this since middle of the season. Maybe we should, as fans, be comfortable with a year mini rebuild.
Yeah, well, they don't rebuild, but yeah, to your point, yes.
I'm not saying like let's implode everything, but damn, let's restructure the offensive line and get the right guys in the secondary for the future and try to figure out what this identity of the Buffalo Bills really is. Because if we're going to go year to year, it's a, you know, boxing match sellout, so to speak, where, you know, these are the price of the tickets and we're going all in. It doesn't feel right to me because I'm looking at all these other teams that they're just, they're getting better and better and better. Look at what the Chiefs did. Look at the bold move they did with trading away Tyreek Hill and still made it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Right. It's like you have to look at that and realize as a fan base, guys, I get the whole verbiage of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But I guess at this point, it's like, it's not that it's broken. It's that if we're trying to hit this goal of winning a Super Bowl, it's not good enough. And right. Maybe we need to reevaluate a lot of levels of this team. You have your quarterback, you have your coach. And you know, that's kind of where I stand with that. Now, Joe, maybe we could wrap these last two questions together just for time's sake here. So do the Bills have a problem developing young talent? And then wrap it up with what are three positives we can take from last season?
So I don't know that they've got an issue developing young talent. The problem is I don't know what the expectation is, right? So Sterling Furrow, Buffalo Rumblings contributor Sterling Furrow, would tell you that that they do have a problem developing young talent. And I think what you have to do is you have to weigh that against, you know, how much development are other teams doing of players versus how much development, and I said this on the Hump Day Hotline, how much development are the players, you know, kind of expected to do on their own? So you take a Josh Allen, who, you know, they didn't develop him much during the season. Although he could take misses and mistakes, his hips being open or closed, or, you know, arm angle stuff, or you know, sight line things and just how he's seeing the field, and he could change it week to week. Most of his development happened in the offseason, in, you know, with his time with Jordan Palmer and throwing with the guys, where he would get with Jordan Palmer and, you know, along with Sam Darnold and some of those, Kyle Allen and some other guys like that. And then he would take that he learned from Jordan Palmer, and he would put it into practice with the guys when he would get together and throw with them. So, you know, you see Josh Allen kind of responsible for some of his own development. Now, I've heard that there's an expectation that these guys kind of come in somewhat, quote unquote, ready to play, which is ridiculous when you look at the college game versus the pro game. And obviously the coordinators are there. Now, Aaron Cromer, if you look at the offensive line, you know, his gift is getting guys to play their best without completely changing their mechanics. So how can I take your mechanics and use them to your benefit? How can I take your mechanics and use them as a strength versus trying to rebuild you as an offensive lineman? You know, when you've got a young guy, it's easier to rebuild a guy than it is when you've got an old dog who's kind of set in his ways. So, you know, I don't know that I've got that answer. I don't know. And it might be different team to team. When you look at a guy like James Cook, you know, and this would be one of the positives. What are three positives? James Cook, you watched him develop through the season. You watched him go from, you know, a young kid that, you know, was out on the field and looked like he was just didn't know what he was doing and which way was up, to by the end of the season being a relatively quality running back that would set up his blocks, find his hole, dart through it, make decisions, make quick decisions. He would protect the football, get a lot of long gainers. Like, he's a great positive. So we watched development there. We've seen development in guys throughout Sean McDermott's career here with, you know, Jordan Poyer. Jordan Poyer wasn't Jordan Poyer when he was a Brown. If he was, he'd still be a Brown. Jordan Poyer barely played. So when he got here, you know, there was some development there. But you can see guys and stuff like that developed here. And then there's other guys that kind of have it. Cody Ford was one of those guys that didn't really develop. So for me, three positives. One would be James Cook. Another positive to me is the fact that, you know, you've got a good young defensive backfield. We're not sure what's going to happen with Jordan Poyer. My expectation is that they're going to draft a safety. But, you know, a positive is that Von Miller is going to play football again. He's going to come back to this defensive line. And the question is what are they going to do with it? So that to me is a positive. And then the third positive is what we saw out of Tremaine Edmonds when he was basically clean off the snap of the ball. And what that means is the problem he had his first 4 years is that the defensive line was lacking so much that every time the ball was snapped, he had a blocker on him immediately versus being able to run free, which is a lot of what we saw this year from Tremaine Edmonds. He was able to run free, shoot gaps, dissect play. So to me, James Cook is a positive. Tremaine Edmonds is a positive. And we have a very young, stout defensive backfield that is going to carry us for several years, in my opinion.
That's fantastic, Joe. Like, literally, I agree with everything you said. And for me, you know, I'm sitting here looking at, do we have a problem developing young talent? And I think it's just the timeline issue. I just don't think that, because, you know, everyone's so stressed about the Super Bowl window, they haven't really had time to maybe develop exactly how they would like to, how they would love to. I think, let's say if the Bills were coming off of a 6-10 season or even worse than that, right? We're going to give the Bills 3 years to figure everything out. But sure. As of right now, it's like, okay, we're coming off of winning seasons. You know, what are you really dissatisfied with? You know what? For me, I'm looking at the young talent and I'm saying to myself, I think that, you know, the problem is it's just the hastiness that I feel with the drafting right now. I just see all of these other players that are fantastic just going off of the board right before, you know, Buffalo, you know, takes their guy. And it's always the same old excuse that I am tired of. It's like, oh, that, you know, if we were just two more spots up, then trade a sixth round to go get the guy if he means that much to you, because now he's blowing up the scene on another team, right? And you're looking at all of these players that have been developing, and that's what I'm saying. Let's pump the brakes and let's just focus on drafting well, not drafting based off of what we think other teams are going to go after. Who cares? There's so much talent that goes by the wayside in this league all the time because everyone wants to go with the measurables and this or that. It doesn't matter who fits your team, who fits your scheme, and who fits the makeup of who you are. That's all that matters to me, in my opinion. The Bills need to really recalibrate in this scouting department on, you know, finding the right guys at skill positions that, you know, we are desperate for, but also we need depth for. You know, not just, I think what happened with the whole, you have Boogie Basham and Gregory Rousseau, and they were put underneath so much pressure. I think we should have drafted someone else besides Boogie Basham, not two defensive ends within the high couple of picks there. Now, with all that being said, I'm going to round this off with the positives I'm going to take. I'm going to start off with two players that I think had a fantastic season. I was very impressed by them. Matt Milano, number one, all pro. First team all pro, excuse me, pro bowler. Just, this was the year I was so excited for him after, you know, you could just tell he was so hungry and wanting to really make up after getting burnt by Kelsey in the game of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And then DaQuan Jones, just coming straight out of, you know, nowhere, basically onto the scene. We picked him up in free agency. I think him and Von Miller are so vicious. Oh, yeah. I think that he almost gives you the liberty to move on from a guy and trade Ed Oliver. Do I want to trade Ed Oliver? I don't. I think he's great for Buffalo, but I think, what do you do? I mean, put him on the edge at this point.
Right.
Because if he's not going to get pressure up the middle for what he's technically, you know, labeled as a defensive tackle to do, and he's rushing the passer, I bet he could do it better than Boogie Basham. You know, that's just kind of how I see it. But, you know, and finally, I just want to round it off with the resiliency of this team. I think that obviously a lot of things were just crazy. It just felt like the Bills were under attack from the beginning of this season. That's how it felt. So many like games that you just felt were absolutely playoff games.
Agreed.
And the Bills have to learn how to manage themselves emotionally, take what the defense gives them more often than not. The running game is going to be huge next year. I think there's a lot to be said about, you know, the development in the future of these young guys and what we're going to do at the running back room. I'd be very completely shocked if they re-signed to Devin Singletary.
You're not.
But But Joe, hey, I didn't want to take up too much of your time today. Please give the audience just all the platforms you're on. Definitely tell them about the Off Tackle Fina show. I don't know if you guys are still going, but man, my wife will find me every single week watching that show with a cigar in one hand and a six pack in the other. Please go ahead and let the audience know where they can find your talent.
So the platform I'm currently on is the platform that's called A Break. So it's been a pretty busy season. I did a bunch of shows. So I had the Overreaction post game show, which airs normally on Sundays, but there was a lot of primetime games. So it was after those games as well. Monday is the Off Tackle with John Fina show at 8 o'clock on Mondays. And then Wednesday was the Hump Day Hotline with Jay Spence, the King. And then I was also I started doing right around, I think it was October, November. I booted up my old podcast RSS feed that was, you know, the Overreaction Buffalo podcast, which is just a podcast that I've had forever that I got away from when I went to Fanatics, and then when I went to Rumblings from there. So I was doing that 3 days a week as well, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So if you want to find me, just stick with anything Rumblings. Most of your listeners probably know who I am on Rumblings. And if you want to find some extra content from me that's going to be starting up again soon, go to your favorite podcast platform, type in Buffalo or Overreaction Buffalo, and it'll pop up with my Buffalo head logo thing. And then, just subscribe and you'll get the rest of my content. Mafia Monday, Wake Up Wednesday, and Rapid Fire Friday, where I basically interview somebody, just throw 10 rapid fire questions at them. So yeah, so that's me.
Hell yeah, Joe. Hey, I'm living closer to Buffalo now. I just visited my brother a couple of weeks ago. I say we have a guy's date. Yeah, I'm going to call it a guy's date at Gabriel's Gate or something. Where's your go-to spot so I know when to hit you up and where to meet you at?
This is tough because, like, people get angry. So I've not been to Gabriel's Gate yet. I did go to Wing Nuts and wasn't a fan. it just was different. And I'm not a wing snob, but I'm kind of a wing snob, right? So when you go to a place like Barbill and that cook, the way the cook is at Barbill, the way the sauces are. Now, the sauces at Wing Nuts were great, but the way they cooked the wing was a little bit different. And for me, inside of Erie County, I'm a traditionalist. I can step away from the hot, medium, and mild because I lived in Columbus, Ohio for 13 years and was stuck going to Buffalo Wild Wings. So I'm used to getting different flavors. Their wings aren't good. Their cook is awful. But give me a good cook with a good sauce, whether it's hot, medium, or mild, or something different. But the Wing Nuts cook was just a little different. Like, I got the Cajun, and they were just, like, drenched. Like, literally, I mean, imagine sticking a chicken wing in chocolate syrup and pulling it out and how coated it would be.
That's
what the wings were like. It was just too much. And I know that some people love that. Like, so for some people, it's like, oh my gosh, there's so much sauce. And I like them saucy, but that was just a little bit. Yeah. So I would love to go to Gabriel's Gate. That'd be fun. But you can't go wrong with Barbill right now. I'm not a Duff's fan either. just one of those. They're just too salty. Their wings.
Yeah. That's so funny. Like, literally. So I hadn't had Buffalo pizza and Buffalo wings in ages. Literally. Yeah. Yeah. It's been over a decade. I went to Carbone's Pizza, got Buffalo style pizza, which I'm a huge fan of now. Yeah. And then I went to Duff's. It was my first time at Duff's, believe it or not. I know. Don't yell at me, Bills fans. But it was I had Lenovo. I forgot what else I had growing up. I was so young, and then I would visit back and forth. But you know, I'm looking forward to going back, maybe going to Barbill. Let's just call it Barbill then. I'll meet you at Barbill. Let's do that. We'll do that. Thank you, Joe, so much for joining me. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining me on Buff Hub, a Buffalo Rumblings podcast. I always finish this podcast off the way I always do. Thank you, first responders and military, for your service and what you do for our community and our country and our communities. Excuse me. Guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Go Bills. Still enjoy the Super Bowl. It's coming up soon. Maybe you won't. It's fine. Have a great rest of your weekend, guys. Go Bills.
God bless.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.